everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I am your host, Jay Larson, and we're doing things a little bit different this week. So this week, I have the pleasure of Sung Su is helping me out. We had a listener request where I do an episode where the tables are turned, and we have someone ask me questions, and I end up being the person responding instead of it being the other way around. And I thought that Sung Su would be the perfect candidate to help. He is a good friend, and he has a fair bit of podcasting experience. So Sung Su, welcome, and why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
First, Jay, yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's pretty cool. Any podcast I can do where I don't have to do the editing, I'm a pretty big fan of. Yeah, my name's Sung Su. I'm out here at the Mile High Meta out in Colorado. A lot of you know me from my War Machine and Hordes podcast, which all ran on the Muse on Minis network. And most recently, I've been really excited about Marvel Crisis Protocol, and my new podcast for that is Across the Bifrost. You can Google that and find it. I started gaming with Warhammer Fantasy Battle, and you know, I've just done all sorts of different things as I've gone on. I've got a large board game collection with Mr. Wheeler and I often reminisce about. And I really enjoy competitive gaming. I, at one stage, was climbing the ELO rankings to try to become a chess grandmaster.
Oh, wow.
I did a lot of Magic the Gathering grinding. I won a PTQ way back in the day. So just, I've always really loved competitive gaming, and that's one of the things that really, you know, drew me to War Machine.
That's interesting. It sounds like you're a little bit of a renaissance man when it comes to gaming.
Yeah, that's one way to say it. My wife would say that I have a short attention span, but I do get really excited about things and dive into them.
I will say that it sounds like we share a little bit of an obsessive personality, but the one game that and I feel like, you know, maybe I'm just lying to myself, or maybe I like the idea of it more than I actually like it. But the one game that I always think like, man, I really wish that I could just dedicate a lot of time to this game and get really good at it is Go. And for whatever reason, like the idea of becoming a Go master just sounds amazing, but I'm way too fucking old for that at this point, so it's kind of out of the cards. But it's a game that has kind of, it fascinates me for whatever reason.
No, I definitely think we share an obsessive personality. That's a good way to put it. C.T. Fletcher talks about how obsession is normally how you'll drive yourself to greatness. And I don't know if I've achieved any greatness in my life, but it's how I've hit the hurdles I have hit. Go is fascinating, and I got really into it for maybe like 3 months. And you know, one of the things we'll talk about a little bit later on with some user questions is a lot of the times whether you're willing to put in the time and the energy to something is very dependent on your meta. Like, how easy is it for me to find games?
Right.
Do I enjoy the online experience if there's an online version for it? Do I like the people I'm playing the game with? Do I enjoy their company? And you know, for me, I don't love any game so much that I'll play it with people I despise. And yeah, personally, the Go crowd in Colorado wasn't my personal favorite cup of tea. But that's just me, and I'm not disparaging any Go players in Colorado. I just the ones I met, I didn't really enjoy their company as all.
Fair enough. I had kind of assumed that it would, at this day and age, almost have to be a experience in an online meta to get really good at Go in America. But that is interesting. Yeah. Real quick, so just go over the format of the meta, this podcast. We'll do this episode, and it will focus on questions from people who back us on Patreon. We have a $2 backer level where you can join a Discord channel and submit questions for guests. You can also make recommendations on people that you would like to see as guests. You can also, we will then, this episode will go for about 45, 50 minutes, and then we'll continue the conversation in a bonus episode of Part B that you can listen to if you're a Patreon backer at the $1 backer level. And the intention is that this free episode should be entertaining on its own, and then hopefully you'll get some additional benefit if you decide to back the Patreon levels. So I guess why don't we go ahead and dive in and start off with some of the Patreon questions that you have for us there, Sung Su?
Yeah, I'd love to. First, as many of you have heard from my other podcasts, I cannot pronounce names. So if I butcher your name, I am apologizing ahead of time. It certainly is not done intentionally. So I kind of group these so it makes a little bit of sense kind of as we dive through them. So a couple people had different like faction questions, and Hybrid Monkey, which is a fantastic name, I'll say, by the way. He says, I know you spent a good time bouncing around between factions, Menoth, Signar, Trolls, Grimkin, and Infernals, all with a competitive mindset. How do you feel these factions are currently doing in the current meta? And if you weren't all in on Infernals 2019, what faction do you think you'd be playing?
Okay, so he first asked how they're doing in the current meta. Signar, I actually think that, you know, they've been kind of much maligned, but I think that they're about to get a bunch of exciting new releases, and I think that they're gonna be fine. I think you mentioned Menoth. They're obviously considered one of the preeminent factions right now. I'm actually, one of the things I'm excited about Infernals is getting a chance to play Hearts of Darkness lists that where I'm playing like in Fiora 3 or some of the other casters, but specifically Fiora 3, I'm looking forward to, partially because I love Colossals and I want a chance to play the Judicator. So I am excited about that with Menoth. As far as Trolls, I want to love Trolls, and I think that in the current meta, they're of the ones I've talked about right now, they're the ones I think I would struggle to play the most, probably because I think that the current Steamroller packet would frustrate me a fair bit with them. I've talked about this a little bit on some other episodes, but it really is kind of with the way that some of the scenarios are so spread out and stuff like that. I think that that's something that is going to require some outside the box thinking for Trolls, and I don't necessarily think that's bad, but it's going to take a lot of energy and I think there's going to be you're going to have a lot of failed experiments, I think, before you hit on some gold and try to get things figured out. As far as the things I've been playing recently, I've obviously been playing the mini factions as they've released, and so I have Convergence. I've enjoyed them. I think that I actually did enjoy playing them at the start of Mark 3, but it did feel like you were playing half of a faction, and that their units, there wasn't much point in playing them. But that was still fun because I do enjoy playing Colossals and Jax and Battle Engines and stuff like that. With Grimkin, I would probably rate them as my favorite experience or faction so far for Mark III. Part of the reason why I'm assuming this isn't going to be a surprise to anyone, but part of the reason why I have picked up the mini factions as they have released is a form of marketing and also a form of product knowledge. And I can't complain about, I guess, a job that is encouraging me to, you know, play more factions or play more games, whatever. But I do get a fair number of people who send me emails like, you know, what do you think of this list, or what should I buy next, or whatever. And it does help if I've played the newest faction and can say, you know, give an informed opinion with the product. And also, one of the things I've talked with you, Sung-Soo, is that I've been trying to put more energy and more focus into doing podcasts and having a wider player knowledge of the game does help with that. Of the three new factions, as I said, Grimkin is one I enjoy the most. For whatever reason, Crucible Guard is one that I enjoyed playing, and I actually really enjoyed the paint scheme that I had for them, but I had a hard time getting as excited for Crucible Guard, and I can't really explain why. I think part of it might be that there was a smaller number of casters within Crucible Guard that really drew my attention. I did enjoy Sevestro quite a bit, but it is something that I can't really explain why I haven't enjoyed Crucible Guard as much, but it has kind of been the way it is. And it's something that I wouldn't necessarily say enjoy, but for whatever reason, it seems like Crucible Guard has made less of a splash in the meta than I expected. It feels like there have been fewer people picking it up than I expected. And part of that is that I thought that I actually got both of these completely wrong. I expected Grimkin to be kind of a dud as far as people picking it up, and I expected people to pick up, a lot of people to pick up Crucible Guard, and it didn't really end up that way. It was flipped. A lot of people picked up Grimkin, and not as many people picked up Crucible Guard, and it's a little bit difficult to say why, other than maybe it feels like the Crucible Guard were a little bit generic or not as strongly themed. But part of what seemed kind of strange to me was that the Crucible Guard do kind of fit a very strong aesthetic that fits in with War Machines. The Combat Alchemists look a lot like Gorman, who is kind of like an iconic look for War Machine, and so I think that's been interesting. As far as Infernals, I have been enjoying them quite a bit so far. I'm not sure what I think of the faction yet, but I am glad that I'm getting a chance to play them. So I rambled on for a long time. I can't remember what all he asked in the questions or if there's anything that I left unanswered with it.
No, I think you definitely covered the question. And I'll just respond real quickly to Hybrid Monkey. It's a really early after the release to kind of be evaluating the meta, in my opinion. It's going to take a lot of time for people like Jake Van Meter to sit down with the new things that he has available and really figure out where he can be. So I think the WTC will be very, very interesting this year, and there's some more questions on that later on, just because right now so many people are exploring so many different things, obviously with the recent Oblivion announcement. You did mention, I think Crucible Guard might have suffered a little bit from their, and I know this wasn't intentional, but from their release, right? I think one of the great things about Grimkin was like people were hyped, and they could buy it pretty, you know, you could spend money pretty quickly. They were able to give Discount Games Incorporated as much money as they wanted and get rewarded with product. I feel kind of like the stringing along of Crucible Guard kind of hurt them a little bit in that regard. What do you think about that, Jay?
I think that the product release that they did with Grimkin was fantastic. And so that year, Lock and Load was in June. You could buy the first wave like a few days after Lock and Load. And then all of the product was out by the end of September. And so that's a fantastic release cycle. They had everything at Lock and Load to buy if you wanted to. And I think that people kind of ended up setting that as their expectation of what Mark III releases were going to look like for the mini factions. And so I think people were disappointed with that, with Crucible Guard. But on the flip side, you know, it's easy for us to get kind of grumpy over that or whatever. But I think that looking at like Monster Apocalypse last year, it was a big reason why there were delays with Crucible Guard. And then this year there have been Riot Quest models that have been competing with Infernals. And I think it's kind of difficult to dispute that the strategy that Private Press did was important for the long-term viability of their company. And so I would maybe say that, yes, it probably did hurt sales of Crucible Guard, but I think that it was probably worth it.
No, I agree with what you say. We are in an age of entitlement, and I'm not blaming millennials or anything. We all have this expectation for near immediate gratification. If we want something, we order it and we get it in a day or two. And yeah, there was an expectation that there would be a similar release to Grimkin. And the release for Crucible Guard, let's be honest, it wasn't horrible, but I do think it lost some of their publicity or the hype that they initially had behind it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. And it also, we're going through that somewhat right now with Infernals. I mean, I would fucking love to see the Great Princess and have that in my army. She's probably the closest to an auto-include that you're going to have. And she's still isn't on the release schedule. So, you know, it is what it is.
No, absolutely. And you and I have been playing War Machine for a long time. If we think back to like the old days, like you knew releases were coming out, but like how long did we have books of things in the past before we actually had the model? Yeah. You'd be like, sweet. And you'd see this model in a book and you'd be like, oh, 2 years later, I got my model. That's amazing. So I think if people are patient with that a little bit, the only other thing I wanted to add as someone who played a lot of Grimkin games as well is Grimkin was just, it's a very interesting play line, right? The lines, it's not a very eloquent sentence, but I think listeners understand, right? It's a very dynamic play. You never really get to rest. Arcana selection and then when to use Arcana was just a super engaging format. And for me, at least, it was a very enjoyable, especially as I was trying to grind hundreds of games in a year. It was really able to keep my interest, which I personally really liked.
Right.
I do think that finding a faction is more than, you know, picking a list that's done really well. You will have to experiment a little bit and eventually something will resonate for whatever reason. Like you said, it's not easy to put into words, but eventually you'll find a list or a theme or a caster or hopefully even a whole faction that really resonates with you. And yeah, I hope everyone out there can find one that they really enjoy playing.
Yeah, one of the things that was interesting with Grimkin is that when there's one of the things this just happens for me is that I'll look at casters and there's some that even if I barely put them on the table, I'll just be like, this caster does not interest me. And with the Grimkin release, that caster was the king of nothing. And one
my
of the
favorite caster, for the record.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess more power to you. My issue with him was that I just always felt like you were generally better off taking a different caster. But one of the things that I like about Grimkin currently is that with some of the releases that have come out for Grimkin, he's a caster now that I find super interesting in the faction. And so I like it in general, obviously, when in War Machine something comes out and it just gives you access to something that you didn't interest you before. And so that's always nice.
No, and like we said before, everyone's personal tastes are going to be different. And, you know, the caster that you're drawn to isn't always going to be the caster someone else is drawn to. And that's about the great thing about the game, right? Is
right.
There are a lot of opportunities to express individuality in, you know, in list formation, excuse me, list creation, and even just how you deploy paint and player lists. So,
yeah.
Hybrid Monkey, I hope that answers your question. We're going to move along here. Joe G Last, which is interesting. Maybe it's just Joe G. We're going to go with G Last. That's a more interesting last name. Actually had some questions about limited factions, so it seemed like a good time to bring it up. Do you see limited factions as a boon to the game itself? And then he follows that up with another one. Do you want to see more of them in the future? So, Jay, I know we kind of talked about it, but what do you think of the general decision for the limited faction releases?
So I'm a fan of them. I have enjoyed playing them. I think that they've done well as far as product sales for Privateer Press. I think the most common counter argument that I've heard on them as to why they're bad is that people say that they just make the game too complex or they make the game too big. And I guess my rebuttal to that is that that's already happened. I mean, let's say that Grimkin and Crucible Guard and Infernals never came out, and Privateer Press was just pumping out more models for each faction. That's still a super complex game. I don't think that necessarily Grimkin is the tipping point or, you know, et cetera. And I do think that there's a legitimate concern that War Machine might get to or may be in a state where it's so complex that it's inaccessible to new players and it's not getting new players as fast as it needs to as other people leave the game. But I don't think that, and I think that, you know, Privateer Press, obviously that's a problem that they need to be thinking about, but I don't think that the limited factions are play a ton in whether or not they're going to fix that problem. I do appreciate that with a faction like Grimkin and then also Infernals, they're bringing new rules to the game that a player has to learn, with the Arcana, with the summoning, etc. But I don't know, it to me it doesn't feel like that's going to change things. I guess I'm curious, what are your thoughts on with that, Sungsu?
I love the limited factions personally. As I mentioned before, my wife says I have a short attention span. It's great for me to be able to spend a smaller sum of money, buy into a faction completely. I can play it for a while. I can iterate on it and move on. In 2018, when I was really grinding and traveling to a lot of events, I played Convergence and Grimkin, in my opinion, fairly competitively at traveling events. And it was great to be able to just like, you know, the combined price of those is still less than owning everything in Signar or Menoth or Trolls. And it was really fun to be able to switch between them. I think that smaller factions also do a better job of kind of staying true to their identity. I feel like with the bloat of some of the larger factions, they kind of, the identities kind of get muddled a little bit, right? Back in Mark I, there were very clear faction identities. And in Mark II, and just, I'm kind of a crotchety old gamer, get off my lawn here, but I feel like some of those lines have been lost. But I do really love how flavorful Privateer Press has been able to make all the limited factions, and they really kind of stay true to their names. I've really enjoyed it, and I think they're beneficial for sure. I do think the Privateer Press needs to be mindful of how complex of new rules that they add to the game. And you know, you hit it, and I never thought of it until I heard you talking about it. Maybe that's the reason that Crucible Guard wasn't that successful. Crucible Guard didn't really right. introduce a new mechanic.
Right.
They were just, you know, stacking debuffs, immune to elements, and like maybe you get excited about corrosion. But yeah, I don't know. It's
and one of the things that I do think is nice about Crucible Guard is that I think that it's a faction. If you are a new player and you think that you might like them, I think it's a pretty strong starting faction. You can get into the faction fairly cheaply monetarily, and it's not going to have too many rules that are super complex or et cetera. And they're still competitively viable. And I do think that the limited factions have been good for players who are wanting to expand into a secondary or third faction, or for people who are newer to the game as well. I mean, one of the issues is that I know that one of the things that Privateer Press was hoping with the theme forces is that, let's say someone's interested in Kador, they could look at the Armored Core theme and have kind of a buying guide and an access point. But even with that, it's still, if you're a new player and you were wanting to get into Kador, it's just such a big task. It's such a big faction. It's so, you know, what should you buy? What should you play? What should you, you know, et cetera. And I think that the limited factions have been good at helping narrow that down for newer players.
No, absolutely. And you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, you love to play with your Colossals. And that's one of the other reasons I think the Crucible Guard is great. You get to use the really cool, big, stompy robots, like the Vulcan and the, my brain's seizing on me, the Battle Engine, whose name eludes me. You get to use both those, and they're very competitive pieces. There are tons right. of really cool centerpiece models out there that unfortunately just aren't super viable. So, no, I agree. I think Crucible Guard's a great starting point for new players. A little bit of a cheaper price point, and there's a ton to learn there. Brandon Owens is, you know, doing very, very well with them. There's no reason you can't do well with Crucible Guard either. All right, so I think that wraps up what we want to talk about limited factions. Bonside asks, why do you hate Circle so much? So do you actually hate Circle, or are there just, like, aspects of Circle that you've chosen to hate?
So the flippant answer, I guess, is that it's easy to hate strong things that you're not playing yourself. And so there's probably some aspect of that going on. There are, whether it's rational or irrational, there's a few models in the game that, and I'm pretty sure we have questions about some of these others coming up, but like, I just fucking hate the Sentry Stone, and I hate the Hellmouth. And the funny thing is that, like, right now, it's not like the Sentry Stone is even making that many waves in the current meta. But it pisses me off so much. And right now, you know, of course, Circle has the best infantry of the game. Like, of course they do. Why wouldn't they? Because, you know, it's just perpetual Circle Christmas. They will, you know, there were a few shining months where...
Shining months, okay.
Where Circle wasn't the best faction in the game. And it's kind of like how everyone felt when all the Crix players were kind of despondent towards the start of Mark III, when everyone else was like, oh my god, this is so amazing. And of course, because it's Circle, it could only be for a few months, but you know, it just is what it is.
Okay, nope, that's very fair. Moving on a little bit, we have a couple questions about kind of new players. So Chrono asks, he said he'd love to hear more about new players and returning player experiences. which isn't really a question, kind of a statement, Chrono. Might want to work on that for next time. But we talked about kind of how new players should buy in, but like a lot can be made about like what size games new players should be playing, and then a lot has been talked about how metas should embrace and build up new players. So do you have any thoughts on those subject matters there, Jay?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that is going to be most helpful as a newer returning player will actually do a callback to earlier in the conversation. And it's going to, you talked about when you're playing Go, it's not as much fun if you don't have people you enjoy playing with. And I think in general, you're going to want to try to find, obviously, a good meta, people you're going to play with. But even narrowing in down on that, one of the things that was really helpful for me as I was learning War Machine, etc., is that I had Trevor Christensen as someone who we were kind of War Machine buddies, who would, you know, if we would be bouncing ideas off each other, or we would be trying to get recommendations from each other, or etc. And it's kind of, I know that you've done some martial arts as well, Sung Soo, but it's kind of the equivalent of having a workout buddy or a sparring partner. And if that's something that you can find, then I think that A, you're going to enjoy the game a lot more, and B, you're going to become better a lot quicker. And so that's one of my bigger pieces of advice, I guess, I would give to people who are new players or people who are coming back to the game. What I guess I'm curious what in you've done a lot of, you've played in a lot of communities, you've done community building, stuff like that. What have you seen are keys to success for newer returning players?
Yeah, that's a hard question in the scope of War Machine, and I know there's a lot of debate on the best way to go about it. One of the things is trying to understand what the player's end goal is. I know that sounds silly, but for tryhards like you and me and probably a bunch of the listeners of the podcast, we always assume people want to get better and people want to, you know, win a local tournament and then win a national tournament and, you know, go on and compete at the highest level they can. But for some people, they just want to, you know, play with models they think look cool or paint models that they think are attractive. So I think identifying what the person wants to do and then trying to be respectful and helping them to get there. Like if someone is really, 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 really excited about we mentioned Armored Core, just playing Manowars, it doesn't help if you just dump on Manowars and tell the person how bad they are for an hour. It does help if you think about the ways that Manowars could succeed and you know, maybe highlight some of the tools that they need to bring, especially in a very wide scenario kit nowadays. So I think listening to the new player, I think trying to be supportive as much as you can are the two things that I think are the most important things. That being said, I am not the best community builder. I do a lot for the tournament player. I don't do a lot for new players or journeyman players. Ben Wiley locally does a lot for them. Greg Terry locally does a lot for them. And those guys are great, and they have way more patience than I do. All of my patience is spent on my children. I did run a lot of tournaments, and I'm happy to try to help people that are trying to get better. But for it takes a special kind of person to really be willing to sit through that 3.5 hour battle box game. And I just don't have that patience anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I'll dovetail on that, and I know you guys do this up at Gameopolis, it's important to run events focused on new players, whether that's team events where, you know, a player on your team has to be, you know, X years new to the game, whether that's running journeyman events, whether that's running like 25 point steamrollers or something. It's good to have, you know, we all get excited about events. It's good to have events for newer players to get excited about. I think that's really important, actually.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's we, in general, we try to have 1 month a competitive event and then the next month be more of a casual event at Gameopolis, and that seems to work fairly well for us.
No, and I think that's a great mindset to have. And either then, you know, we'll talk about it a little more. Hopefully, you know, I'd love to see more champions events and more weird events being run on the side too. I think, you know, anything that can try to keep the game interesting, keep the game fresh, is good for the game and the meta in general. Chrono also asked, this time in a fully formulated question, is what's your favorite type of opponent?
So it took me a second. I forgot who it was who asked the previous question. But so Chrono is James Morehouse, and so the obvious answer to this has to be like devastatingly handsome Australians with winning smiles and winning personalities. But after that, I guess I would probably say, you know, one of the things that I appreciate the most in an opponent, and there's kind of, I think, an unofficial people kind of make an unofficial list of people who fit this category, and people kind of try to emulate it, but we don't necessarily talk about it too much. But when you sit down for War Machine, I think that obviously both sides want to win, but I appreciate it when someone has the maturity or the discipline or the whatever to subordinate their desire to win into a desire for to be fair or to be friendly or to have an enjoyable experience together, or to, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do while you're still trying to win that, and sometimes it may actually decrease your percentage chance of winning if you do some of these things, but there comes a point where, at least for me, I've seen this in an evolution of a lot of gamers, where you start out the game and you have this red hot fire in your belly and you want to win, and then as time goes on, you start realizing that there's potentially some things more important than winning. And I appreciate it when people, I guess, have come to that realization. So I don't know, that might sound a little strange, but what are your thoughts on that?
There are two things. I think it's great you know these people's Discord handles, because I have no idea who's asking these questions. So I used to say that I just wanted an honest opponent. Kind of building on what you said, I want, you know, I've forfeited games or I've cheated, you know, accidentally. And I think that's important. Like, do I want to win? Yes, but I've made a mistake. I don't see a way to rectify the mistake in the confines of the game. So I should forfeit. And Corey Doyle, a great player from Canada, I think most of the listeners will know Mr. Doyle, taught me this. And he says he wants a communicative player. And at first I was like, I'm an introvert. I hate fucking talking to people. Oh, I think I can curse on your podcast.
Yeah, you can.
It's fine. Okay, excellent. I hate talking to people, but it actually made a lot of sense afterwards. I'm very communicative when I play. I'm going to be like, this guy is just out of 11 and a half inches of your inverter. This person is just towing the zone. This person is just within 5 of the flag, but then still outside of your 2-inch melee reach. I think just being communicative and helping your opponent understand what you're trying to do, because, you know, tables get bumped, models get moved around. It's as exacting as we like to pretend the game is. There is still a whole bunch of fudge things. But if you're communicative and you're expressing your intentions and the intentions of the board state, it just makes it so much easier, in my opinion, to go through a game. So if you can, just be engaging with your opponent. There's a few times at large conventions I played someone and they had earbuds in, and I'm like, I don't know how this is going to work. So I just yelled really loudly and was very obnoxious. But for me, just an honest and a communicative player would be ideal. And I'm just going to take a minute here. I know we're supposed to be talking to you, but I feel like I'm talking a lot. But, you know, I think it's telling that you do have a lot of friends, Chrono included. Whaley, you've made a lot of friends at War Machine, and I've made a lot of friends at War Machine, and that doesn't come from being a, you know, ferocious diehard who's super nitpicky and it's just like an asshole and is doing anything to win. That comes from being like an engaging, nice person, and you know, relationships kind of build from that, and I think that's something that's important. We've talked about it. I'm probably going to War Machine Weekend this year, or excuse me, Warfare Weekend. And it's not to play any particular game, but it's to see all my friends. It's to hang out with people. And like, those friendships are made on the tabletop.
Right.
All right. Cutter from New York says, self-reflection time. Jay, what do you see as your strengths and weaknesses as a player? And then he follows up with, how do you leverage those qualities as a competitive player?
So strengths and weaknesses. I think that one of the things that became a strength for me is that I felt like after playing enough games, and one of the things that was interesting with my play career is that when I started out, I was very, very concentrated very strongly on assassination. And then as I started doing more tournaments, I started concentrating more on scenario play and attrition. And one of the things that I think has been good for me is that for whatever reason, I feel like a lot of times I can have an intuition as to what I think is going to be the best course in the game, whether it's to how to best pursue victory, how to best do defeat. And a lot of times it's, I'm able to, especially when it's a faction that I've gotten reps in with, etc., I will be able to, at the start of my turn, just kind of have a natural feel of like, this is the plan that I need to have in order to maximize my best chance to win. And I think that that's something that's been a big benefit to me. As, and one of the things that a book on game theory, I've mentioned this on Chain Attack before, but there's a book on game theory that is written by a guy named Sirlin, S-I-R-L-I-N. And the name of the book is Playing to Win. You can, I think he has physical copies of it. I bought a ebook of it to read on my tablet, but it, also the entire book is free on his website as well. And one of the things that's interesting about it is that he talks about different play styles, and there's the turtle who is the defensive master. There's the attacker who, you know, is going all out, putting constant pressure on all the time. And then he says that the best style is the person who can assess the situation and realize what the best strategy is, and also what's best going to exploit the opponent's weakness. And I think that that's something that I've tried to incorporate. It's the book's actually pretty short. I would recommend it if any of you haven't read it. It's an enjoyable read. His, most of his background is actually in competitive video game fighting, and so it's kind of interesting hearing game strategy from that standpoint. But a lot of game theory is universal across all games, and so it's still a very interesting read, and he writes well. As far as weaknesses, honestly, I would say the easy answer to this is that I would say my own mental game in association to the game. One of the things that I can struggle with sometimes is feelings of anxiety, feelings of putting too much pressure on myself. One of the things that I realized eventually, as an example, is that I, even though I love the WTC, and even though I have had great memories of playing the WTC, I never want to play in another WTC. And part of the reason why for that is because I put so much pressure on myself that I didn't want to let my opponents down, or my teammates down, that I would focus in on a pairing, or I would be grinding games, and it would get to the point where it felt like a job, or it felt like I was playing well past the point of enjoyment or having fun. It was about I need to win so that my team can win, so that, you know, I don't let them down, et cetera, et cetera. And another example of mental things that I struggle with is the very first Lock and Load I went to with the Chain Attack crew. It was me, Scott, and Trevor. And before the first tournament started, I went into the public bathroom and threw up. And it's kind of a strange dichotomy for me, because I do enjoy competition, but I can also, it can get to where it's an issue for me, or where I don't handle it well. And so that's probably my biggest weakness as a player.
No, that makes a ton of sense, and something that definitely resonates. The worst thing about me ever starting personally to make a podcast is it does put a bit large target on your back, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I was talking to Charles Soong once, and I said, right now everyone says, oh, I'm this record against Charles Soong, and I aspire to be the person that they talk about instead of just how they, or who they compare me to. But yeah, it just, you can put a ton of pressure on yourself. And when you show up to an event and the only way that you're going to have a good time is to win or do very well at the event, that can be a very taxing, long, tiring day. That definitely, that makes a lot of sense. And I had no idea that you vomited before that big event. That was, thank you for sharing that, Jay.
Yeah, it is kind of, it's, I think it's a really interesting topic. I think I've maybe said this on a podcast as well, but one of the things that I think is really interesting to me, and one of the things I think is really difficult, is to achieve a level of excellence and then maintain that. And one of the movies that I like quite a bit is a movie called Rush, and it's about some Formula One race car drivers. Who one is this guy who he has a drive to be a champion and to be one over and over and over. And the other guy, he has a drive to be a champion. He becomes champion and he's like, wow, I did it. And then he just kind of lives the good life. And I think it's really interesting if you, for example, one of the conversations I think we've had off air, both Sung-Soo and I follow the NBA. And there's a lot of people who were like, man, I'm so fucking tired of the Golden State Warriors. And meanwhile, I'm like, I'm fascinated by them because I think that the adversity that you face in trying to be a champion over an extended period of time is very interesting. There's so many things that are fighting against you, whether it's the team dynamics where, Draymond Green might be like, well, why am I not getting paid more? Or, the list goes on. But I think that that's a team sport example. But, it's very rare when you look at a game like War Machine for there to be a player who maintains a level of excellence and winning for a really long extended period of time. And so I think that's an interesting topic.
No, I've always been shocked at Jake Van Meter's ability to stay on top of the pile. And
yes.
Pat Dunford across the pond is another person who's just been very top of the game for an astounding amount of time. And no, we should do a documentary on one of them. I don't know. Maybe we can get Zosia to follow Jake around with a camera for like a month and see if there's any good footage out of that. We'll see what can come of that. So now we've got some questions kind of about organized play. Kind of dovetails nicely. We were just talking about some events there. So Joe G asks... Joji says, you've been a big champion of the champions format. That's interesting word choice there. What do you think is required to make that format more accepted by a larger meta? And then he asked a bunch of questions. So let's just solve that one first. So what do you think has to happen with the champions format or any future potential alternative format to really garner buy-in in the War Machine Hordes community?
So one of the things I think is interesting with champions is that we've kind of seen its evolution and its development happening before our eyes. And because it had issues in its earlier iterations. And so there's a lot of people who are like, I don't want to play champions because champions sucks. But the thing that's nice is that I feel like we're finally there. We Hungerford has succeeded in getting champions to the point where it needs to be. And so I think that one of the things that we need to do is just kind of say that and be like, if anyone's like, oh, I don't want to do champions or whatever, tell them champions is in a really good place right now. Just give it a try. And, if there's every possibility that they might try it out and be like, I still don't like this. This sucks. But I think that overall, if people approach it with an open mind, that they'll have a good experience. And I actually do think that there is a lot of value in a limited format in War Machine. And I think that it's something that's good for the community and good for metas to experiment with. After the Champions rules dropped, one of the things that Gameopolis did is we ran a month-long league where people didn't have to play Champions lists. But when it came to game night, people were encouraged to play champions lists. And people actually had a fair bit of fun trying out new things. And also, there's also something kind of enjoyable knowing that, I'm going to go to this format and I don't have to see X power caster or X list that kind of pisses me off or whatever. And it's enjoyable to get to play in kind of a curated meta and have a chance to try out new things that you wouldn't see in a wide open format.
No, those are great points, and I'm glad to hear it was successful up in Idaho for you. Do you think there's any credence to putting champions at a different point value?
I think that'd be fine. I honestly could actually see that making a lot of sense. I know that there's people who have said that they like the idea of the game being played at 50 points, and I think it could be pretty interesting to have champions maybe be a 50-point format. It would do something to help differentiate the champions and the other format a little bit more, and it also, I think that one of the things that champions can hopefully be good for is as an introduction to newer players to some various competitive formats. And so playing at 50 points is something that can help with that. The concern that I always have with lower point level games is that it makes it so that potentially if I'm playing a force that focuses heavily on an alpha strike, and if I succeed in getting a strong enough alpha strike at lower point levels, that obviously is going to make it difficult for my opponent to come back with. And so that can be a little bit of a concern. But I think that 50 points is still a very enjoyable point level. And so I do kind of like the idea of people being able to play at different point levels.
No, and personally, I think that a 50-point champions format would be a fantastic entry point for newer players to work on. They could focus on just a few more succinct themes. They don't have to learn quite as much as the meta. They can kind of focus on just like the quote-unquote boogeyman of the champion season. I think it could be a great entryway. And, you know, I hope it does get more testing out there. I remember, I think Hungerford asked, what would you think of 50-point champions, and the internet basically rioted. So I hope people come around on that a little bit. And, you know, I'd love to see it on the table a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it'd be interesting. I think that his question wasn't specifically on champions. I think it was the game in general, but it did definitely elicit some strong responses.
Wow, that is a very political reply from Jay Larson. Elicit strong responses. All right.
Why don't we go ahead and we can end this episode here and continue things on the next episode. I think we probably have a few more questions, and then you also had a few different areas that you had drawn up some questions on your own for us to go over. But I do want to thank you, Sung-Soo, for helping out with this.
Yeah, anytime. It's been a ton of fun. And yeah, coming up in episode 2, we've definitely got some future WTC questions. I've got some questions about other games, some questions about, you know, owning and running a game store and Discount Games Incorporated. So some good content to follow. It only costs you a buck. So hopefully people turn in for it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for backing us on Patreon. And hopefully those of you who haven't, who are listening, hopefully it will be worth your while to back us. And just to close things out, this podcast is sponsored by Discount Games Inc. You can get your gaming desires fulfilled there, and we would love to receive your patronage. So thank you again, everyone, and have a good night.
Happy gaming.